Hello and welcome to another episode of the EG Property Podcast. I'm your host, EG editor Sam McClary, and on this episode we're talking about the value of creative space and the role it has to play in delivering and sustaining vibrant communities. I'm joined, over the medium of Teams, of course, by the crew from Creative Land Trust, a charitable organisation set up last year by the Mayor of London with the aim of securing affordable workspace for artists in perpetuity. We caught up following their appointment of former Eden Project boss Gordon Seabright as their new CEO and the recent launch of a new £2.3 million culture risk business support fund by the GLA. That fund is going to provide cash for grassroots music venues, LGBTQ plus venues, artist workspaces and independent cinemas across the capital. So sit back, grab a cuppa and relax for the next 20 minutes or so and join me in discussion with Alex Note, Catherine Webster and Gordon Seabright as we take a look at the role of the charity and why bringing creativity into the built environment matters. And remember, as this discussion has been recorded over Teams, the sound quality might not be quite as expert as you've come to expect from Team EG, but I can promise that the commentary, at least from Alex, Catherine and Gordon, absolutely will be. Enjoy. So we're here today to talk about the Creative Land Trust, what it is, what you're doing, what your ambitions are, and we're going to talk about that in a setting of the current crisis that we're living through, actually, and how creative spaces were already suffering, I suppose. We were seeing them or seeing the disappearance of them, if that's not mixing some metaphors or something, and how actually the need for space, the need for creatives to be able to do what they do, is as important now as it was beforehand. And you guys have funding in place that you are able to operate throughout the crisis. But it'd be good for our listeners, Alex, maybe if you could just outline for us what the Creative Land Trust is, how you've come about and what it is that you are striving for.
Sure. So the Creative Land Trust is a new independent charity set up last year, 2019, by the Mayor of London with some key sort of founding partners. So Bloomberg Philanthropy, ACE, the Arts Council England and the Outset Contemporary Art Fund. And these kind of parties all worked a lot with the creative and the artistic sector in London, particularly. But the aim was really to try and address that need that you alluded to for kind of long-term, secure, affordable workspace for artists and creatives, but in that kind of perpetuity. So the aim is to secure 1,000 workspaces over 5 years. And there's that initial pot of funding from those funders to enable us to do that. But what I guess is different and kind of the new aim around the trust is to try and do that in a way that it has sort of self-sustaining models so that we can secure further additional investment. So it's not about just replicating or getting in the way of what's there already. It's not about stepping on the toes of existing studio provider spaces. We want additional space and we want it to be a kind of a self-sustaining, self-funded model over the longer term.
And Catherine, why does it matter? Why do we need affordable space for artists and creatives and more of it?
Well, we definitely need more of it. It's the creative industries are growing. They're one of the growing sectors, something like three times the UK average. But they're getting priced out of London. And that means that we are losing to other cities, Lisbon, Berlin being very strong cities who are attracting creatives. But the creative industry is also not only just a great economy, it's great for the community. And I don't think anyone wants to see culture at risk, really, and lose that from London. But they are also, typically self-employed, small enterprises or single artists who, from the where they start, they're at a very low earning potential. Obviously, some of the bigger names in art are much higher, but at the outset of their careers, it's a very low earning potential, and they need to benefit from affordable space, just like in the housing model. You know, we have affordable space for people to also be part of the community in cities where otherwise they'd be outpriced.
Excellent, thank you. And before we talk about all of that more, Gordon, I'd like to sort of know from you what attracted you to the Creative Land Trust and what it is that you hope you will bring as CEO.
Well, I mean, it's a powerful mission to look at, and an amazing opportunity to be in an organization right from the outset. There are a couple of things I'm really passionate about that the Creative Land Trust is connected with. Well, one is the world of art and culture, as you can imagine, but also the work that we do is about making the city a better place to be for its entire population, and that that chance to work in what's effectively regeneration as well as arts and culture, well, that doesn't come along every day. So and it's an amazing group of people and funders to work with, so a hugely exciting time to come aboard.
And it is hugely exciting, but it's obviously at the moment hugely difficult as well. We're in a period of time that is just bizarre, and we don't know what the future looks like. We don't know what space is going to look like. We don't know how we're all going to get back to work, be that, you know, me sitting in an office by a computer, or a creative being in a studio getting drawing inspiration, I suppose, from those people around them. So what do you think the creative landscape can look like, I suppose, either during this crisis that we're going through or post? Alex?
Well, so I am, as you know, Sam, because I bang about it all the time, I live in Bristol, which is a home of street art. And one of the things that I think, you know, I find really profound, you know, just on the kind of mandated exercise that I'm doing out and about, is seeing how responsive the kind of street art community have been to the crisis. So there's a famous Banksy that's based on the girl with the pearl earring, but it's got a kind of a security alarm as the earring. And at some point last weekend, I don't know if it was Banksy or if it was someone else, but they managed to fit a kind of a fabric mask over the picture. And it was just, you know, it's such an iconic scene, you know, on my little harbour run in Bristol, and you kind of see that responsiveness. I think, you know, we always bang on about placemaking, and, you know, it's something I'm really passionate about, although I know it is one of those terms that can be used very liberally to mean lots of things. But as Kath said, and our cities, you know, the vibrant communities that we all love and look after are often created by artists in the first place. So the Meatpacking District in New York, or Shoreditch, or Brixton in London, you know, it is those hubs of, you know, creatives in those spaces that create the energy and then draw the people and the activity. And we are going to need that public art and then that engagement to bring people back again, to feel confident to come into spaces and breathe and enjoy them. And I think that the most devastating thing, obviously, it's going to change out of all recognition, and we don't have crystal balls, but, you know, office and retail, all that needs to come back in some new form of way. But having a sense of place that has responded to this through the kind of art that people can connect with, talk about, catch somebody's eye and have a little conversation, even if it is still at 2 meters distance, I think is really important.
Do you think that throughout this crisis, for me personally, it certainly brought home the need for community, the need for our sort of towns and villages and cities to bring people together, to realize this is our home, and it, you know, it matters. Are you feeling, confidence the wrong word to use here, but are you hopeful that the switch that we've seen in people, in that we all seem a little bit more human, will enable businesses to understand that creativity and the arts actually plays a bigger role than they might have expected in that community? Gordon?
Yes, I really do. I think if ever we've had a moment to pause and realise the value of creativity, the joy that it brings us, the challenge that it brings us, the diversion sometimes that it brings us, you know, that moment is now. And I think the combination of that and people realizing how much they value their communities, how much they value the things they do together with their neighbors, means this is absolutely a moment when we have an opportunity, I guess, to work with the grain of developers and local councils and so on, to make sure that we have arts and creativity right at the heart of our cities.
Excellent. And I guess the practical question is, how are you gonna do it? You've got 5 years of funding. You've got some great funding partners on board, but how are you gonna spend that money, I suppose? What is it that you're practically gonna do, Catherine?
So the funding we've got is for the organisation and for purchase of the first building or buildings. So the sort of the short-term goals, we have other short-term goals, which Gordon can talk to you about as well, which we didn't originally envisage, but have come about due to this crisis. But the short-term goal is to obviously find our first property. We've had a few that we've looked at. We have put forward bids on some and not actually managed to buy anything as yet, but actually that may have played back to us now. We have people now approaching us and saying that buildings are available. But that's
and what kind of building is it? Buy. Sorry, Catherine, just to jump in. What kind of building are you looking for? Just might as well do a free ad in here.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So, I mean, the building can be sort of any shape or size. We've had office buildings that never quite got into being office use. So they weren't completed, but we would have taken over and sort of compartmentalized them to be studios. We've looked at retail properties with upper floors that we could have used that gives an abundance of natural light through roof lights. I suppose any space really we can take over with our industrial spaces that we've looked at as well. It needs to be able to meet our affordable criteria. So we obviously can't buy in prime central London. We are going to be looking zones 2 to 6 and probably the latter numbers rather than 2. But, you know, we need a sort of certain critical mass in terms of the number of studios. So probably 25 studios plus, that sort of size. And somewhere where artists can get to the building from public transport, and that it lends itself to be compartmentalized. We'd like to keep costs low, so if it has lifts, then okay for goods lift to upper floors, but not masses of money to be spent on service charge and things like we prefer openable windows, so potentially older buildings, so you know, the fumes from some of the creative activities that they may be undertaking can be
still
extracted.
Still dismissed, not anything dodgy.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't mean that sort of fume. but, you know, actually the sort of the remit is quite wide that we'll look at. We've had success of sort of ground floor uses as opposed to sort of, you know, what might have been retail use before and compartmentalize that into studios. So this, you know, this really could be something that will bring back that community where other ground floor uses, you know, retail's having such a terrible time. This could be something that could bring back activation at that level, which would be very interesting.
Yeah, sounds great. And if I certainly hope that reaches the ears of people who need to hear it. You talked as well there, Catherine, that there might be some other short term goals that have come about in regards to the current crisis.
Yeah, actually, Gordon might be best placed. He's right in the middle of sorting all of this out and staffing up for it. But it was something that the Mayor of London and the GLA have got a pot of money to help culture at risk and really help artists who might be fearing that they cannot pay rent or the like for their space. But I'll hand over to Gordon if that's right.
Of course.
Well, the Mayor of London's really stepped up here. I thought that the job was all going to be all about increasing the number of spaces for artists, and it will be, but there's an immediate need to preserve the current number. So and of course, artists have been struggling to pay the rent, and so studio providers have been struggling to keep them in their locations. So the mayor has set up a culture at risk business support fund, and that actually covers a number of cultural areas, but includes art studios. And Creative Land Trust have been commissioned to run the bit of it that's called the Creative Workspace Resilience Fund. So we started on Friday. We launched it, and we'll be putting out about £1.5 million from the mayor and from Bloomberg Philanthropies. into the sector in order to enable the studio providers to pass that the benefit on to their tenants, the artists, through different means, reduced occupancy costs in different ways. So it could be rent and mortgage or utility costs being cut or insurance or maintenance. Maybe there'll be some quite innovative solutions, but the idea is to see us through this crisis period and make sure that the artists, even if they can't earn much or any money at the moment, they don't lose their studio spaces. And at the end of the crisis, you know, we've still got a vigorous sector that then we can then move on to expand.
And how important is that collaboration, I suppose, between the tenants, the artists and landlords, to have those kind of understanding conversations? There's a lot of aggro, I suppose, that we're seeing in the national press at the moment between, you know, playing landlords and tenants off each other. You know, we have government moratoriums that are coming out that aren't maybe not particularly fair to all, you know, the whole circle of people that are involved in creating communities, be that the artists, the tenants, the, you know, the retailer, the landlord, the lender. Do you feel that as the Creative Land Trust, you have a role there to play in enabling those discussions and making sure that there is some balance and people communicate in the right way?
Well, I think Alex talked about the value of culture in placemaking. And I think that sort of indicates that to developers, there's a great shared interest here in maintaining the health of the sector. So yes, absolutely. I think as the Creative Land Trust, you know, we have a role to play, you know, those most difficult of times in trying to support our sector, because that's of benefit to developers and councils and landowners. Everybody wants to see our sector come out of this healthy because it's in everyone's interests.
And I think that's one of the things, Sam, that's interesting about the composition of our board, actually, is that, you know, we have artist trustees and we have representatives from, you know, workspace, from core property, from fundraising, from sort of impact investing and ESG. And that's a really key thing where I think, as I said, we're trying to move away from just that interim meanwhile use dependency, which is what a lot of artist space provision is at the moment, and try and build something that's secure and long-term and affordable. And I think that aligns really, really well with the kind of aspirations of ESG investors at the moment, who want something that has social impact and, you know, environmental impact as well and community relevance. So it's really exciting, but it is complicated because we're sitting across a nexus of all, you know, a property acquisition for someone whose day job has never included any of the things around, you know, lease length and negotiations and contract terms is a tricky thing to find out. So actually being able to have a pool of people with really differentiated expertise, but to work it together and work as closely as we can with the studio operators and the artists themselves, hopefully will enable us to be a bit of a bridge across those very different spaces.
And, you know, I guess it sort of plays into the conversations that Alex, you and I have had outside of this, really, around, you know, sort of diversity and inclusion in the sector. And that comes in more forms than gender and the colour of our skin. It's about, you know, the type of real estate that we have, the type of occupiers that we have in any town, city, village, you name it.
Exactly. I think just the variance of what counts as a creative for the purpose of the trust. It was fascinating. You know, we've got everything from milliners and silversmiths, you know, sort of digital artists, and all that. It's phenomenal that mix that you can see. And when we've been into some existing studios and when we've done a board away day and we've gone and visited different kind of spaces, just a range of activity that's going on that is artistic. It's mind blowing. And I think it's really, everybody should have the chance to go and experience that because it's just so interesting.
And what do you think would be, I know you've got ambitions in that you want to have 1,000 workspaces within 5 years, but in terms of ambition in the sense of how you want people, how you want real estate to view creative space, What would that look like for you, Catherine?
I think it's to understand that, you know, the creative space can be part of the overall picture. And by that I mean, you know, it starts maybe with the guys in, who sit looking at the planning and the Section 106 is that they hand out to different developers and stuff to really conceive of creatives as part of the community on any building that you put together. Because, as you know, when you ask me about what type of space we can have, the type of space we can take is incredibly broad. And so it's not that we can't see ourselves fitting into different places. It's more the affordability, which is perhaps our the issue for many for many people within the sector. So if it can be brought in very early on with the planning authorities to really think about how they can bring creatives into their community, and they do then help the community stay together and really sort of gel, then that would, I think, just create a nicer place for people to work. I mean, it was something we discussed with Gordon in his interview process, which was, you know, a really interesting discussion about how different people, you know, and maybe people going back into the office and thinking about how they might be working in the future might want to really feel that there are others around that they're supporting and helping, by paying sort of full price on office, that you can have a sort of affordable space within the building that goes to creatives.
That's an interesting point, isn't it? If we've learned from this that we are able to give as a nation, as a world, then let's keep doing that. And if those that have can pay a little bit more to enable those that have not to add something extra for all of us, then that to me sounds sensible.
Absolutely.
You mentioned affordability there, Catherine, which is a long running issue that we've seen in all sorts of things. Everything always gets too expensive, doesn't it? That's the nature of the world. I wonder if, given that we're going to be in already are in a sort of state of economic crisis, and when we come out of this, we'll be looking to support that economy and get ourselves back on track. Does that sort of cause any concern that affordability will become even more of an issue, or are you hopeful that we will have learned that there is a balance to be had here, and that if we want ultimately to create places that work, and therefore if they work they will make money, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, does it?
No.
that we'll come out of this with affordability being something that is more considered? That was a really long question, I apologize. Gordon.
I didn't know it was coming my way. I think we have a fascinating challenge for me, as somebody new to the sector. Achieving affordability intrigues me, and how the trust is now going to work with the market to blend, I guess, different sources of funding. So that could be ESG investors, but that'll be sitting alongside grant income. It might even be sitting alongside donations from philanthropists, and coming up with that blended investment package that makes it possible to achieve affordability for artists, and doing that not only just with meanwhile spaces, which would be more straightforward, but doing it for places that are going to be held in perpetuity and used for artists. I think that's one of the most interesting challenges that I feel I've walked into.
There's another way of looking at it as well, which is that you can, within a space, you can have cross subsidization. So you could have someone paying for space who, you know, based on the ability to pay. So there are creatives who are seen more as sort of the office end of creatives. You know, think architects or digital advertising or that side of things, who then can cross subsidize the affordable side for those less able to pay. And we've also been looking at the concept of whether or not we turn some of the sector somewhat on its head a little bit, and maybe learn from other sectors within real estate, in that, you know, is there a space to do co-working for creatives? Can you get that space to, you know, a creative won't be in its studio, well, a person won't be in its studio all the time. Lots of artists aren't artists full time. They also have other jobs to help support themselves. So can they actually just sign up to use space for the hours that they need it? And that space can then work harder for other people, which then just means that it's more affordable for the hours that you want to use it.
Exactly. And I think that is what we're all going to have to do more of. One of my favourite spaces in Bristol has a hair salon that has become over time a sculpture studio in the back, where they feature some of the art in the middle of the salon, and they also use it as an event performance space in the evening. So it's got, you know, quite a complicated licensing arrangement, but actually really, really, you know, activates a kind of a space in an up and coming bit of the city that is drawing all sorts of new people to it. And I think that creativity of just how you use space is something we've got to get better at. There are so many lessons from the flex office market, and that's not just, you know, the WeWork model, as important and disruptive as they are. Actually, there's so many more nuanced ways that you can address smaller spaces and, you know, to be creative and activated.
I guess if, you know, if the saviour for retail is experience, the same rings true everywhere, isn't it? If we can bring people exactly into an area to experience something, be that inspiration, creativity, you know, a really nice coffee. I'm missing those, you might have guessed. but, you know, that's what real estate, that's what the built environment should be about. And I always wonder if we tell those kind of stories more and create those kind of places where that is quite easily seen, then suddenly real estate, this industry of ours, becomes a much more attractive place to want to do better, and will encourage more people to make a positive change.
Yeah, definitely. Then we might do better on the perceptions index on the GRI, or yeah, scored us so badly.
Yeah. Imagine.
I don't want to sound too highfalutin about it, but if there's, you know, among the things that we're all realizing in this difficult period in our lives, it is how much is what is important to us, I guess. And I come from the world of horticulture. I was running the Eden Project before starting this job, and I was very familiar with how much people valued working in spaces that had lovely plant life around them. Mm-hmm. I think people are rediscovering perhaps a passion for art and culture, and will place more value than they ever have before on that business of spending their working days in a place that is surrounded by beauty or inspiration or challenge. And that's an opportunity for us.
So one of my favourite things on Twitter is a friend of mine, Sharon Aminosa, here, I'm sure you know, and so she works at the MOD as the kind of infrastructure estates director, but she's also a former architect and a phenomenally talented sketch artist. And she started doing, just for friends, a kind of a sketch a day of places denied to us by the coronavirus. And they are, A, phenomenal sketches, but B, really evocative and getting a huge following, because people kind of see them go, oh, you know, Shepherd Market or, you know, St. Paul's Cathedral, or she's done places all around the world, you know, New York and High Line. And people, you know, just seeing somebody sketch an interpretation of a place that you've been to and loved or always wanted to go to is so incredibly powerful. And I think it's linking into that, as you say, Sam, that real estate, for kind of quite a long time, it was very easy for people just to focus on kind of the asset, the spreadsheet, the numbers, the units. But actually what we're dealing with is way more creative and exciting. It's places and people and communities. And it's harder and it's messier around the edges and stuff you can just chuck in a spreadsheet, but it's infinitely more interesting.
Absolutely. And I guess that brings us to a final question for me to round us up, which is what creativity means to each one of you, and how you are hopeful, because I think it's important in these days to try and finish always with something positive to look forward to. How you are hopeful that whatever happens on the other side of this crisis, because there will be another side, that creativity forms part of all of our lives going forward. I'm going to start meanly with you, Alex.
I think creativity is it for me. It's a release. It's that form of expression is a really cathartic, kind of positive feeling. Whether it's kind of I'm a terrible artist, but I'd love to learn to draw. It's one of the things I thought I might try and do in lockdown, which I've completely failed to, but I will have a go. But yeah, I am kind of a lapsed musician, and actually rediscovering some time to do that and have that kind of release has been really, really powerful.
Thank you. Catherine?
I think it's inventiveness to me. It's being able to maybe look at things through a different light and be able to perceive things in different ways. And that's why, you know, that was the reason why I offered to be co-chair of this charity and thought that I could and help them. We have this day job that is quite rigid sometimes in its way, and this was like a very nice outlet to sort of try and find inventive ways to help people continue to be part of our community.
Fantastic. Thank you. Gordon?
Well, I'm speaking to you from Cornwall, which is my current home, and I'm a director of the Local Enterprise Partnership, and we talk about creativity loads for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is that we don't see it as a sector. We think it's massively important to every area of economic life and development down here, but we also talk about quality of life a lot. You know, that tends to be why people live in the far southwest, and that business of having amazing creativity around you, but also being able to take part in it, that is a key part of what makes life worth living. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to have come aboard now and joined an organisation that is all about the stuff that makes life worth living.
The stuff that makes life worth living. That's an excellent place to end. I just want to give you a one chance, Gordon, to do the pitch to our listeners about how they can help the Creative Land Trust and what if anything you would love to see from them.
Well, we've talked a bit about the value of culture and the arts to placemaking and to making the places that people live and work the best places they possibly can be. And I would just ask developers to talk to us about spaces and talk to us about the interesting things that we can work with them to do to make spaces better than they would otherwise be, and to bring sort of joy and creativity and challenge right into the heart of our city's developments.
So if anyone does want to bring joy and creativity and heart, I love that, into their towns and cities, then do go to the Creative Land Trust website. It's just creativelandtrust.org, and you can find out more there. You can give some support. You can get support if you're an artist listening to this, but do go and check it out. Thank you for now, Gordon, Alex and Catherine.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the EG Property Podcast, and to our guests Alex Note, Catherine Webster and Gordon Seabright for sharing their expert views and opinions, and of course for doing their bit to bring creativity to the forefront. And don't forget, if you want to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that EG Group has to provide, sign up to all our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.